Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning and welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I'm Salima Molson. I use the pronouns she and her. And I've been an active member here. I've been an active member here since before the turn of the century.
Since the 1900s.
Think about it, it's not that long. And I'm truly honored this morning to serve as your lay leader on this wintry Sunday. And it's good to see so many of you here in the sanctuary as well as online as we come together to celebrate life, our life, and celebrate us. That is all of us. All of us, regardless of who we are or where we've been, where we come from, or where we think we're going. Whether we identify with a religious denomination or a spiritual practice or not, whatever and whoever you are, it is my joy to welcome you this morning into this ever-growing circle of care and compassion, affectionately known as WOOF. Whether you are physically here in the sanctuary or watching online from some warm, cozy spot in your pajamas, okay. How's this? Can everybody hear me? Yes. Okay. Good. Good. And if you can't, just wave your arms or something. So whether you're here in the sanctuary or watching us online, we are delighted to have you here. No matter the color of your skin, your age, your immigration status, or how you identify your gender, if you do. For it is love that occupies the heart of the UU community, our principles and our values. And as the author Alice Walker reminds us, love is not concerned with whom you pray or where you slept the night you ran away from home. Love is concerned that the beating of your heart should kill no one. We're going to begin this morning with a special announcement from our board president, Karen Stratton.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I am Karen Stratton, and I am the board president, and I want to invite you to an important event that's happening at WOOF in 2 weeks. It's on March 2nd. Here's the slide. It's a kickoff for our stewardship drive, and it's an opportunity for all of us to participate in the strategic planning that's been happening this year. And you are welcome to join us to this event, no matter how long you've been attending WOOF. You might have noticed that our sanctuary is very full lately, and right now we're having people having trouble finding where to sit. If you have a seat to the side of you that's closer to the wall and you wouldn't mind moving over so the newcomers could take the seats at the aisles, that would be wonderful. If you need to be at the aisle, that's also fine. But if you can move over and fill in those seats, that would be helpful. There's one up here in the front. There's one up here in the second row. There's one over here. Anyway, back to the speech, which is limited to 2 minutes. So you might have noticed that our sanctuary is very full lately, and our parking lot sometimes doesn't have enough room for everyone. And these are the issues that the strategic planning team has been working on this year. And we need your input, too. What can we do to increase our capacity to welcome more people? We know people need WOOF's community right now. I need WOOF's community right now. And we welcome your ideas, and we want to build agreement about what is the best way forward. This is also the time of year when we ask our members and friends to make a financial pledge to WOOF. That's what we mean by stewardship. Stewardship is the practice of caring for and managing the community that we share here. Our goal, are you ready, is $240,000. It's a lot of money. Last year, we raised $217,000. So I think we can get there. We want to increase our capacity, so we have to increase our resources. So please join us on March 2nd, immediately after the service, for the kickoff. We're going to be offering lunch downstairs for everybody. There'll be childcare for the kids, and you get an opportunity in small, facilitated discussion groups to talk about these issues of welcome and increasing our capacity. Last year, we had about 50 people who attended this event, and last year we talked about our visioning ideas, and our discussions were animated, they were fruitful, they were so helpful to the leadership and the future of WWF. So thanks for listening, and I'll see you on the 2nd.
Thank you, Karen. And now we are going to sing. Oh, that was such a great response. We're going to sing verses 1 and 4 of hymn number 354. So if you can stand as you're willing and able, let's do it. Don't sit down. We like to take a minute now to turn and greet each other, especially speak to someone you haven't met before.
Thank you.
All good things must come to an end. But after service, we have coffee and conversation downstairs, so be prepared to continue these little conversations when we get down there. So, as we settle in this morning together, I want to thank Nora. I want to invite her to come up and thank her for lighting our chalice, the universal symbol of our faith. And as she does that, let us share the responsive reading, This House. Words are on the screen. Yours are in bold. I think mine should have been in bold. As we light our chalice this morning, may its flame remind us that this house is for the ingathering of all nature, human and otherwise, a welcoming space that embraces both struggle and celebration, that guards the dignity and value of every person, including our children, each one loved and respected exactly as they are.
This house offers a platform for free voice and a mutually respectful expression of conflicts of opinion.
It is a house of truth-seeking, where scientists can encourage devotion to their quest in community with humanists, pagans, and spiritual seekers alike.
It is a house of art and music, where our shared ministry is enhanced by new ideas and creativity.
It is a house of prophecy, outrunning times past and times present, with its ever-evolving vision of growth and progress.
This house is both the cradle for our dreams and the workshop that brings our dreams to life.
So today, in keeping with this month's theme of inclusion, our service is one in which three intrepid woofers, and I mean intrepid woofers, participate in our This We Believe series. Today's offering is titled, An Atheist and a Humanist Walk into a 12-Step Meeting. You get the drift. In this format, a trio of woofers are invited to share their thoughts about the beliefs or the philosophies that guide their lives and how they came to be. And those in the audience are invited to share comments or questions. Our presenters today are Kim Transier, who you will probably recognize as one of our music part of our music collective, our longtime humanist poster boy, Tom Needham, and one of our newest treasures, Chuck Steffi. As we prepare to explore the many faces and the names for what many call God, let us sing together Spirit of Life. You can stay seated if you like.
Oh, you're going to do something.
Albert Camus, who said, "In the depth of winter, I finally learned that within me there lay an invincible summer." This is the time in our service when we tune into the invincible summer that lies within each of us. That place where we look beyond what is troubling and making us anxious, and we let ourselves instead just be grateful. Be grateful for what we have and consider what it is that we have to give. We often sing a song that says, "From you I receive, to you I give. Together we share, and from this we live." Today we are comforted by the shade of trees we did not plant, and we drink from wells we did not dig. In a moment, our offering baskets will be passed to gratefully receive your financial contributions, whatever they may be. And as is our custom on the third Sunday of each month, we will be donating our entire basket to our chosen cause for this quarter. And that is the UU Ministry of Earth, the UU Ministry for Earth, envisioning a world in which reverence, gratitude, and care for each other and for the living earth are central to the lives of all people. Donations are used to create resources, programming, and compile initiatives that make it easier for all of us to be part of healing our earth. So if the hosts will come forward now. And join me, if you will, in our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Which the words will be on the screen for in just a moment. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others. Now, if there are any other children in the seats back there that want to come up front, our religious education director, Izzy Hart, has a story to share.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
My name's Izzy. Some people still call me Liz. My pronouns are any and all. And today, I'm reading a book called Bodies Are Cool by Tyler Fetter. We're at the end, that's why. Just a little preview for you. Okay. Got it. Everything's good. Bodies are cool. Big bodies, small bodies, dancing, playing, happy bodies. Look at all these different bodies. Bodies are cool. Lanky bodies, squat bodies, tall, short, wide, or narrow bodies, somewhere in the middle bodies. Bodies are cool. Round bodies, muscle bodies, curvy curves and straight bodies, jiggly wiggly fat bodies. Bodies are cool. Dark skin, olive skin, every shade of brown skin, pinky pale or peach skin. Bodies are cool. Poofy hair, wavy hair, springy curls and flat hair. Lots of hair, no hair. Bodies are cool. Leg hair, armpit hair, fuzzy lip and chin hair, brows, meat in the middle hair, bodies are cool. Hazel eyes, brown eyes, monolids and round eyes, blind and wearing glasses eyes, bodies are cool. Crooked faces, bump nose faces, flat nose, full lips, gap tooth faces, stick out ears and thin lip faces, bodies are cool. Freckled bodies, dotted bodies, rosy patched or speckled bodies, dark skin swirled with light skin bodies, bodies are cool. Hairy fingers, wrinkly fingers, dimpled elbows, chubby fingers, wobbly arms, and stubby fingers, bodies are cool. Soft tummies, saggy tummies, flatter sticky outy tummies, innies, outies, pregnant tummies, bodies are cool. Thick legs, scrawny legs, knobby knees and long legs, roll up to the table legs, bodies are cool. Faint scars, bold scars, stripes from getting bigger scars, marks that tell a story scars, bodies are cool. This body, that body, his and her and their body, however you define your body, bodies are cool. Growing bodies, aging bodies, features rearranging bodies, magic ever-changing bodies, bodies are cool. My body, your body, every different kind of body, all of them are good bodies. Bodies are so cool. Thank you. And today, if you are interested in learning more about religious education here at WOOF, if you want to get involved or you are currently involved, we're doing some classroom management techniques and curriculum orientation today. It was going to be in Acorn and then it got moved to Fireside, but now, surprise, it's in Forest Hall. So join us there after coffee hour, noon to 2. We'll have some snacks and some fun and learn what else is cool. So now, if you would please stand as you're able, and we will sing the children out to their classrooms.
Mildly. Yes, we are getting a little warm in here, and so if you would, if you're near a window and would like to just crack it open, that's going to help cool things down a little bit. Thank you. Thank you, Annie. So to put it mildly, we live in challenging times. We're confronted almost daily now with some form of human absurdity or atrocity. The news is scary and confusing, and yet there is joy. There is always joy. Susan Cain, in her book, Bittersweet, How Sorrow and Longing Make Us Whole, describes bittersweetness as a tendency toward states of longing, poignancy and sorrow, light and dark, birth and death, bitter and sweet, forever paired. Here at WOOF, we make time every week to share the joys and sorrows that we bring with us in our hearts by coming up to place them symbolically in a stone and then silently release them gently into the water that represents beloved community. So if there is something on your heart this morning that you would like to share in this way, we invite you now to come, starting at the back, if the rows starting at the back would come down on this side, place your stone, come back up this side. I think we can do this pretty orderly. And if you'd like to say a word or two about why you're placing the stone in the water, I will have a mic so that you can do that if you wish. Or if you would rather come up after the service and place your stone in the water, you're welcome to do that as well. When everyone has returned to their seats, we will take another 2 minutes to sit in silence for reflection, meditation, or prayer, as you may wish. Thank you, Betsy.
I'm placing a stone to honor my brother who was taken to the ER this morning. We'll be entering hospice later today.
It was great to have my brother here this week.
Sorrow. Today is Marta's oldest son's birthday, and the sorrow is that we won't get to celebrate it with him.
I work for the federal government, and I'm terrified.
Of hope. It's so easy to be frightened and angry and cynical, and I'm choosing to hold on to hope.
My sister and I are here visiting from Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. I'm a member of the Hamilton First Unitarian Church of Hamilton there. So, you know, we've been struggling with tariffs and all that sort of stuff, and I just think it's really important that we all just connect as humans, as people, and it's just a joy to be here today. Thank you.
Even though they've removed all transgender people from the Stonewall Memorial, we still exist.
I was also going to mention Stonewall, so, you know, what a shame. I mean, you know, to all my trans buddies out there, people I know, people I've not met yet, you know, we're there with you.
Stone for all the joys and sorrows that we hold in our hearts and that we will take a few moments now to consider.
Shifting waters of the river of this life, I was swimming, seeking comfort, wrestling waves to find a boulder I could cling to, a stone to hold me fast. Where I might let the fretful waters river round me pass. So I found my anchor place across. And so I found my anchor, a blessed resting place. Trusty rock, I called my savior, for there I would be safe from the river and the dangers. Proclaim my rock divine. Protect me in the rock. God is a river. God is a wild, raging rapids, a slow, meandering flow. God is a deep and narrow passage, a peaceful, sandy shore. God is a river swimmer, so let it go. Rock tightly, conviction in my arms, never looking at the stream, deep my mind from thoughts of harm. But the river and its coming kept on hugging at my legs, till at last my fingers faltered and I swept away. So I'm going with the flow now. Relentless. bodice twists and bend, acclimating to the motion and the thoughts of being led. And the river is like my body now, it carries me along through the ever-changing seas, by the rocks I sing this song. God is a river, not just a stone. God is a wild, raging rapids, a slow, meandering flow. God is a deep and narrow passage, a peaceful, sandy shore. God is a river, sinner, so let it go.
Now reach that same realization. Hi, I'm Kim Transier. This is Chuck Steffi. This is Tom Needham. And though advertised as intrepid, I think we're all feeling a little trepid up here. Right, on the subject of this, we believe. We're going to first do a go-around where we each talk for just a minute or two. Then we're going to do a second round where we develop whatever we said in the first minute. Beyond that, I don't know what's going to happen. And then after that, that's limited time so that there's plenty of time for anybody to ask us questions afterwards. So as we're talking, you can think about what you wish we were saying. Maybe we'll say it later.
Good morning. My name is Chuck, and I'm an alcoholic.
Good morning.
When Salima asked me to participate, I was hesitant for a couple of reasons. One, because I thought that my views, which are influenced by the 12-step programs and my Buddhist practice, are far removed from the interest of the congregation, so that no one would care. And the other one is my neurological health recently, actually after I accepted the speaking talk, learned more about where I stand on recovering from a stroke from 5 years ago and having more recent outbreaks of spells or episodes of TIAs or something that left me part of the time as I was preparing for this where I couldn't write with my right hand, which has actually come back. So anyhow, I decided to go ahead and go ahead with the talk. On my 12-step, we use the concept of a higher power, which each individual is free to choose and define for themselves. And that's really sort of a radical spirituality, where we each get to define our own higher power, what works for us. And because of that, that allowed me to stay in the program for a long time. As a Zen practitioner, I have come to believe that my higher power represents my true self, which is awakened through meditative practice, which results in an unfolding of my awareness in each moment. I strive for conscious contact with this process, which consists of trying to experience each moment uncritically and without expectations or worries. Just let it be. When I can, I simply am mindful and pay attention to my life, the pattern, and the way are revealed. Just as I trust my heart to beat with no conscious effort, so too I come to trust my life to the dictates of my true self. In recovery step 3, we make a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood him. Very Christian language, but it's even in the big book, which is written by Bill Wilson, a conservative Christian, they give us permission to look at it in a broader terms, which I have to be able to do in order to exist. That underscores the complete spiritual democracy of recovery. It's left up to each of us to reach our own understanding about the nature of our true self, higher power, God, or even no higher power at all. I'll now pass the mic to Tom.
Thank you,
this is wonderful to see a full house, a very full house, with all your faces, and look out on that. So I find this quite inspiring. I was raised an Episcopalian. My parents weren't into religion much. Church was just what you did. I came to find the ritual very comforting, and I fell in love with the language of the Episcopal Church. I went to church less in college, but still went. During that time, this was the 60s, there were some marvelous progressive Episcopalian clergy and theologians, and I thought any religious tradition that could produce those kinds of folks was worth considering. So I stayed with it. Their writings about situational ethics and others was the first spark in my interest in philosophy and deliberate thinking about how to live a life. I didn't do much in religion through the first half of my adult life, but around the middle of that, I visited a college friend of mine whose judgment I respected, who happened to be Unitarian. And I thought, if this works for a guy like that, it's probably worth checking out. The most convenient congregation happened to be WUF. And when I first walked in the door, it immediately felt like home. And I've been here ever since. I found my tribe and my lifelong friends. And I took the fourth principle to heart, started my search for truth, which continues today and will probably never end.
Thank you, Tom.
Well, when Salima asked me to say something about what I believe about spirituality, my first reaction was, short talk. I don't think I have spiritual beliefs. Maybe it's just that I don't use the word spiritual. So I lay awake wondering, what do I mean by spiritual? Then I lay awake wondering, what do I mean by believe? And yeah, I tell you, it's been a long few weeks. And I think everybody should get up and do a This I Believe, only because it's very educational for the person who's trying to do it. And a lot harder than I thought it would be. I think probably what Tom's going to say pretty well covers what I believe. I think I'm what's called a materialist, which is, I think the natural physical world is all there is, but I hate that phrase because I think what there is pretty great. I don't feel the need for supernatural because I think the natural is super. I do call myself an atheist, like it says in the title, and one reason I accepted the invitation to speak was that I feel like maybe people think atheist is a word for an agnostic who's mean about it. I mean, there were some books published about 20 years ago that got a lot of press by famous atheists about how great it was to be an atheist. And of course, I read those books, or I started to, and I just thought, I'm not liking these personalities. It just seemed like very harsh, I thought. And I don't think I am that way. So I thought maybe I should get up and say I'm an atheist just so you know that some of us are mousy and nice. All it means is that I don't believe in God, and it doesn't say anything about what I do believe, which is why I still lie awake at night wondering what I do believe. There's a quote that I got off the Atheists of America website, I think it is. I don't know how to attribute the quote. I don't know who said this, but if atheism is a religion, then not collecting stamps is a hobby. So I realized there isn't anything I believe in the sense that theists believe in God, because I think that means something like a container for everything or an explanation for everything, and I have not found any such thing. But if believe in just means endorse or practice as much as possible, things like love, music, you know, the obvious things that we all believe in, but I don't feel like I have any wisdom to impart about that. That's probably my time. We'll go around again.
Before we do that, I'm looking at the clock and realizing that somehow we have gotten behind time. And so in order to stay within our bounds of being done with our service by 11:30, we will need to just make a quick round here in order to have the Q&A time that we felt was really important. So if that works, can we do that? Okay.
Yep.
Check 1, 2. Check 1, 2.
Okay. I think somebody threw a switch since I tried it the first time. Okay. As I increase my understanding of the nature of my true self, it becomes the basis for my continuing reintegration into a life founded on eternal patterns. My Buddhist teachers taught me to meditate on impermanence by studying the 9 contemplations of Atisha, to really explore and come to grips with the inevitability of death and focus on what is important to me in light of my mortality. And that's sort of where I am right now. Atisha was an 11th century Tibetan monk. His contemplations are summarized as follows. Death is inevitable. Our lifespan is decreasing continuously. Death will come regardless of whether we are prepared for it. Human life expectancy is uncertain. Death has many causes. The human body is fragile and vulnerable. Our friends cannot help us from death, or cannot keep us from death. Our material resources cannot help us at the moment of death. And our own body cannot help us at the time of death. Consider these truths. It's very sobering, as I would say, to consider those. But you know, that's where I am right now, and knowing that that is what the future lies fairly soon allows me to celebrate life for what it is right now, to appreciate life, to meditate on the contemplations at the same time that I'm enjoying every moment that I can of this precious life. I hope that my higher power, true self, will continue to allow me to continue to live my best life possible while I continue to help others, which is part of the 12-step programs, for as long as I can without sinking into inaction and despair. Doing so requires me to acknowledge the truths of Atisha and the impermanence of this life. It teaches me that I must continue to surrender to my selfish ego. My higher power, true self, allows me to recognize the powerlessness to control and helps me accept the things I cannot change and to find serenity even in my powerlessness. My higher power is the God of the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. The same higher power that in my younger life provided serenity to accept the things I could change, other parts of my life will hopefully continue to provide serenity as I live a life where impermanence and declining capability are apparent. Pass to Tom.
Thank you, Jeff.
Okay, this I believe, the elevator pitch. I have six major beliefs that follow in logical sequence, and I'm going to bump through them quickly. I'm also basically a materialist. I believe that the physical natural universe is all that exists, but there's an awful lot of it that we don't know about yet, and that we're going to find out. Second major belief, I'm an agnostic. One of the indications that this was my home is I found my first visit, I found a bumper sticker on a car in the parking lot. The bumper sticker said, "Militant agnostic, I don't know, and you don't either." The most important thing, though, is not whether God exists, but whether he intervenes in our daily lives. And therefore, the most important question is not whether you believe in God, but whether you believe in miracles. My third major belief is that the whole universe, and especially the part that we interact with, is random. And creates all kinds of implications in terms of making likely things unlikely and the other way. Fourth major belief is in my search for my best life, my starting point has been trying to figure out the right questions to ask, because if you ask the right questions, you're more likely to get good answers. The best questions I found are a set of existential dilemmas that apply to every human being alive now and who has ever lived. We all need to come into answers to those dilemmas, our own answers. The dilemmas are death, meaninglessness, freedom, and a form of existential isolation. The fifth major belief is that while there are a number of places to try to find answers to these dilemmas, religions are one, I've found humanism to be a place where I can find answers to these questions. And we can go into spend an entire career looking at humanism. My sixth major belief is actually a little unusual. A prominent psychological researcher that contends that the brains of all humans have evolved to feel a set of emotions, both positive and negative. Most significantly, he believes that of the positive emotions, there are eight, which taken together can be considered a kind of pragmatic spirituality totally independent of any kind of religious dogma. I'll go through quickly. Compassion, forgiveness, love, hope, joy, faith, awe, and gratitude. I just spent an hour this morning leading a group of people talking about a deep dive on awe, and it's wonderful. My conscious goal is to fill my life with as many of these as I can. I will leave you with this. When you arise each morning, think of what a precious privilege it is to be alive, to breathe, to think, to enjoy, to love.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm thinking, how can I make this super short? And I thought, things we all have in common were awareness, appreciation, a kind of humility, I think. You look startled. I had an experience of awe. I completely agree about the eight emotions being the pragmatic spirituality. I think that's why I'm confused about spirituality, because, of course, I believe in those things and I practice them as much as I can. I just don't call them spirituality. I had an experience of awe involving a crowd of people watching a mother elephant putting her baby to sleep. And the crowd was perfectly silent, even the kids, because kids understand very well, you don't mess with
putting the baby to sleep. And it was around Christmas Eve, and the mother elephant with her trunk gently stroking the baby and the baby's eyes closing and everybody silently cheering and then gradually stepping away to have her me time. So gently. And everybody feeling so together with each other and feeling like we really understood the experience that the elephants were having without anyone saying a word. And it was Christmas time, silent night, mother and child. And I just, oh, I get chills just even remembering that. And that has nothing to do with any God or anything supernatural.
Feel free to applaud if you like. And as is so often the case, we are going to run a little over time. I trust that's going to be okay with you. If it's not and you have to leave, please just go right ahead and catch up with us later, because we'll be downstairs and Q&A can continue down there. But I would like to be able to take just a few questions at this moment. So would you raise your hand and I'll bring you the mic? Anybody? Did I see somebody back here first?
One of the reasons that I love coming here so much is the diversity of beliefs. And I was sort of raised Catholic. Sort of. I lied in the confessional, okay? And then I was nothing for a while. And then I went the evangelical Christian route for a while. And I never bought into that 100% either. And so, like you, Tom, the moment I walked in here, the moment I pulled into the driveway, I was in awe and in love. And indeed, I still am. Thank you for sharing.
Hi, my name is Adam. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Adam.
Chuck, thank you so much for speaking. I have to leave, unfortunately, to go work at my job. I work at a brewery.
The flame of our chalice. Remember that we carry this warmth, this flame, this love with us wherever we go this week. And let us stand together in a little circular form and sing ourselves out with Carry the Flame.
Until we meet again, carry the flame of peace and love until